Good morning, everyone, and welcome into the 16th edition of LFP Live. And if you can see the backgrounds, these aren't green screens. We've gotten out of our rooms and out of our setups. I am at Falcon Lake. We've got the merch on here. Got the you see the bus back there and the trees behind me. Brian is at the lake, set up Wi-Fi out there.
You can kind of see through the trellis back there. I've got there is water. I was gonna do this outside like you. But right as I was about to set up, the wind picked up from which would have been blowing directly into the mic, and then it started raining. So not really something I wanted to.
You sure you didn't want to risk it?
I'll just put the umbrella up and hope.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. And then Elliot is in his regular setup, but he's here. So we love it. We got the full crew. We love to see it. We're outside. It's kind of a chilly morning, but hey. I'm tethering to my phone. We'll see how this goes.
I have Starlink now, so I am.
Yeah, you're good.
Absolutely thriving.
Oh, you're going to be perfect. There's going to be no interference whatsoever.
No, I'm going to have better internet than I do at home.
There you go. Yeah, just don't tell Rogers because I might go over my like monthly data limit today.
And then it's going to slow down.
Throttling you on the call.
Yeah, exactly. Enough about our backdrops. Everyone's here. Love to see it. Thank you, Matt. At 8:40, always. Good morning, Level Flight. C-Max here. That was a POMO special last night. Have your team get outplayed, get out chance, and have your goalie bail you out and your talent pot a couple goals. Memories of the teams of the Jets past. That honestly did look like a Paul Maurice special last night. Elliot, I don't know if you caught game one, but that was it.
To a T.
Bob can't save them all. Oil in seven. I picked the Oilers to win in six. And after last night, I honestly feel fine about that prediction because, as Jay said here, Bobrovsky, unless he plays like that every single game, I think they'll be fine. C-Mac, again, Stoop, good first game for Pomo's boys. Bob is looking fantastic. T-Kono Polly's in chat. G'day peeps, on time. Finally on time, you love to see it. Matt, hello T-Kono. My mother who pays for your data. Well,
zing.
Maybe the data will be okay. We'll see. Doug, morning guys, making bacon, eggs, and fried potatoes. Yum.
That sounds great.
That does sound fantastic. Brian, game one last night. What was your initial thoughts of game one of the finals? Florida taking the 1-0 series lead, 3-0. Bobrovsky with like a 4.0 expected goals shutout, which is unbelievable. But yeah, last night, Florida Oilers. What were your thoughts?
Well, it's interesting. I'm taking it the different way where you said that you are, more confident now in your pick because that's how the Oilers played in game one. I'm more confident, I think, in the fact that Florida is not going to look like a class below team for the rest of the series because we know what they've done. Like they've kind of run the gauntlet a little bit here. Like, obviously, they're not the teams that of past where they are really sort of like that, like the Boston team from last year would have been a better matchup, obviously, but tough matchup there. Obviously they have to go through Tampa, which Tampa's not what they used to be, but they're still the Tampa Bay Lightning, right? And then to deal with what they did and to look as good as they did while doing it, and then to have the Rangers, and like truly, like it was a situation where when I saw how bad they looked last night, I was like, okay, how long is this going to last? So I do still think, I mean, obviously the Oilers are going to do what Oilers do. Mm-hmm. But we're also seeing that Bobrovsky standing on his head and Stuart Skinner allowing, two goals on seven shots or whatever he did to when they went down. I don't know.
Sportsnet tweeted out a stat. He gave up a goal in the first shot of the game. It's the 11th time that's happened this season. Seven times in the regular season, four in the playoffs. First shot of the game, goal. Like, that's just can't start that way. 11 times in a season. I don't know. Nope. Elliot, what were your thoughts of game one last night? If you're able to catch it. I didn't even ask.
No, I was watching the game for sure. I thought the Oilers played well, but I also think that to a fault, yes, the Panthers weren't at their best, but at the same point, they were still good enough to where, the Oilers make a mistake, they go and capitalize on that mistake, right?
Yeah.
So it wasn't like the Panthers were so terrible and like they scored on a fluke goal. No, the Oilers just kept pounding pucks at the net. Bob made a couple saves, and then the Oilers would make a mistake and not hold the line or something, or pinch, and the Panthers would come the other way and score. Right?
Yeah.
So at the same time, the Panthers were bad, but they weren't so bad that they should not have, like, obviously they deserve to win the game because they capitalized on their opportunities. The Oilers should have scored on within the first 30 seconds, they should have scored. Like, I think if Zach Hyman was it Hyman or McDavid? No,
McDavid. He got the deflection on the Bobrovsky attempted clear.
Yeah,
went right to Hyman.
I'm sure if Hyman had put it anywhere but Bobrovsky's face, that's probably hitting the post of the bar and going in.
Replay.
Oh, like just
direct.
Yeah, directly.
It was like, how did he crawl to his left and make another save after that? Because Hyman tried to tuck that near post and he got like stoned again. Also,
playing out of his mind. Yeah.
Two things. Ahead. Speaking of Skinner, I just want to say, whoever the reporter was that asked Stuart Skinner after the game, because I was watching the post game interviews about how he thought Bobrovsky played last night, was there was something along the lines of like, oh, how do you think, like, how do you feel about Bob making, like, Bobrovsky making saves on the other end? And Skinner's response was like, I'm watching. He'd make a save and go, wow, that's a great save. Like,
the guy with like the worst view of the other goaltender. Like, he's at the other end of the ice. Like, I don't know.
There's no celebration from our team.
Or it's also like, he's the goalie. What do you want him to? He's supposed to be doing the exact same thing. What, he has no impact on trying to score on Bobrovsky. Yeah. Like, and then to your point, Connor, about you still feel good about the Oilers. Sportsnet threw out a stat right before, as the players were coming out onto the ice.
Yes.
It's about 75% of the time, which I think is a crazy stat. I don't think in any other sport that has a 7-game series that I don't think it's that. Like, I think the NBA is like, it's only 60%.
That's insane. No, I like it's that number like, to come down.
I was sitting there with my girlfriend and she's like, what? So if the Oilers lose tonight, they only technically have historically a 25% chance to win the remainder of the series. And I said, yeah, that is like unbelievable odds for a Stanley Cup, like for a final. That is just crazy.
Nuts. Where the two teams are supposedly evenly matched, like game one shouldn't matter that much, but it does. C-Mac, you absolutely got to love the fans in last night's game. They were loud and loving every minute of it. Florida Tampa have amazing, knowledgeable, and passionate fans. Love it. I will say Kyle Bukauskas, the Sportsnet host before the game, was saying, you know, it wasn't long since the tickets in this building came without a free hot dog and a free drink because they couldn't get anyone
in a parking spot.
The games. Yeah.
Yeah.
And a parking spot. Yeah. Like everything. And now it's,
sold out. Long time Florida Panthers fan Ariana Grande was in attendance last night.
Yes. Long time fan.
Which is like it sounds tongue in cheek, but it's true. Like, she was like apparently like original season ticket holders with like her family back in the late 90s there. And there's many pictures of her riding on the Zamboni. And there's also a news
story. Else was there to do it.
someone wrote there was like a news story about how she was hit by a puck twice in a game while just sitting there.
The biggest what if in pop culture history. If Ariana Grande got smoked with a puck. Anyways, Nurse and CeCe from CMAC here. Yeah, that pairing is brutal. They split them up and now they're going back to it. Some flashbacks.
No, Nurse just looks like he has no idea what he's doing.
That pairing's getting absolutely
cooked. He looks like Sam Darnold with the ghosts. Like, he just looks like he has no idea what's going on, man.
Yeah. Oilers need to learn how to clear the puck and stop these soft turnovers. Florida's forecheck is insane. They were all over them. Nurse had a bad game. Yeah, Nurse Mike getting McDaniel. Dragged. Miami Dolphins had, I know, former 49ers assistant Mike McDaniels. It was rough. Anyways, let's move on from the Oilers. Actually, Well, before we do, watching from Alberta, thanks LFP for all your hard work. Bring us the latest. Thanks so much. Thank you so much for tuning in as LFP goes kind of worldwide here. I'm on like the Ontario border. I don't know where Brian is, but
we're like all over the place. 45 minutes from you.
Okay, nice. Like maybe one of these times we'll have to like drive up and do it. Do LFP live duel.
No, yeah, I'll zoom out and then you'll just be sitting right here.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Well, thank you. We really appreciate that. Let's move on to some Jets talk. As we are a Winnipeg Jets podcast, the Nikolaj Ehlers report this week, David Pagnotta of the fourth period, he brought up, I forget what the official wording was. It was that Ehlers would welcome a move, I believe was the official wording on that. Again, nothing we haven't really heard before here. Murat Ateş reported 3 weeks ago that he expected Ehlers was going to be traded. Or at least shopped because there wasn't a mutual kind of contract there. And this is just kind of furthering that report. Then there was some talk on CJOB of what Ehlers' value is as a player and what they might be able to get for him in return. And we wanted to bring up that discussion as well. So, Brian, I'll start with you. What was your reaction to the Pagnotta report? And we've talked about Ehlers' value before, but it seems to be taking a bit of a turn recently for the worse in terms of like there it's less value than we think. So maybe the report first and then just maybe touch on what you think his value is in a trade.
Well, I mean, the report, as you said, it's nothing that we haven't really heard. I think we've all kind of come to terms with the fact that there's going to be a move at some point or another, like either he gets moved this offseason or he walks in free agency. I don't think it's going to be, you know, to an extent where he would consider re-signing unless something really drastic happens. But I feel like his value, and we've talked about this too, where I think the value and his league-wide perception depends on the team that's interested in him, right? Because if you're looking at a team that is sort of based a bit more heavily on, you know, the eye test, a bit more heavily on, you know, some of the specifics of his game that aren't necessarily jiving with their identity, they're not going to want to, you know, pay a lot. But you look at a team like we brought them up, like Seattle, like Carolina, who are very analytics heavy in their approach, and they'll see that, oh my goodness, this dude provides a lot of offensive value to a team that if, you know, deployed properly, he could be a serious part of our future. And I think that, I don't know, maybe it's a situation of other teams trying to plant a little bit of a perception thing in the media, because that happens a lot where it's, you know, other teams and their representatives would be like, hey, I heard this, just so it seems like it's going to be a lower price. And then, you know, it's going to, you know, stew over the next 3 weeks and, you know, you hit the draft and then either we'll get more or less. And I don't, as I said before, I don't think you're winning a trade in this situation. It sucks because it feels like this has been boiling for a while. But you know, the closer we get to, I think it coming to fruition, I think it's, I've come to terms with the fact that I will not be happy.
Yeah. Elliot, what were your thoughts to the report?
I mean, it is what it is at this point. And like we've already talked about a ton, the league wide value is like the craziest thing, because some teams seem to value him so much and they think that he's a great guy that's going to be able to contribute multiple levels, either whether that be like creating offense or being a primary line driver, but and people think that, oh, he's this great north south, like I'm gonna use my speed and this and that, whatever. But then there's also other teams that have a different philosophy that think that he's not great going east-west and he's a turnover machine, right? Mm-hmm. So it's just this weird scenario where, I don't know. I think Jay brings up a good point here, and I also want to extend this to even PLD as well, as we didn't think we were going to get very much from PLD either. We thought we were going to lose that trade. And I think it's safe to say, we're not even going to get into what PLD's done in LA. Yeah. Just looking at who we've gotten in this trade, like Velarde looks like a good piece to the future for the Jets as long as he's willing to be here.
Yeah.
I would even say as much as Alex Iafallo didn't have a great season. I mean, I'd rather have Alex Iafallo. Yeah, I'd rather have him over BLD. And, you know, obviously we haven't gotten much of the Kupari, but he did get injured. And so that kind of, that limited what we got to see out of him.
He was,
but like,
you know, a supplementary piece, right? Like,
yeah.
I wasn't expecting an otherworldly, you know, turnaround for him.
Oh, for sure.
But the fact that he did play some meaningful games down the stretch. I don't know. It's that package to me at the time, it looked good. It looks better now, even especially with looking at what Dubois has done.
So my whole point is I think I agree with, as much as I agree with you guys, that I don't know if we are going to get as much. We also do need to give Chevy the benefit of, I think he deserves the benefit of the doubt now, that I think if we give him a little bit of time, he might be able to work his magic and get something. Now,
as
I think the only caveat here is the only way that I think that Nikolaj Ehlers is still here after, if he's not traded by the draft, if he's still here by the trade deadline, I think the only way that he's still here at that point is if he signed an extension. And I think the only way that he is signed for an extension, I don't think so.
I don't think there's a good chance that it happens, but I think that there is a chance that he just walks with no contract. But then it's like, well, maybe it's like Jay Miller.
I don't think he walks.
Like in Hellebuck, where they come into training camp with no contract, or it's like the Line A, come into training
Thanksgiving
camp,
long weekend,
and then like one game, and he gets traded, or Thanksgiving long weekend, they sign an extension. Like, I could see
that. I just mean that I don't think he's gonna walk like at the end of this year. Like, I don't think that happens.
I do think that it's a possibility though that he's under this contract on the Winnipeg Jets going into training camp. I do think that
I just meant that I don't think he walks. Like, I think the only way that he is still here after this trade deadline is if he signs an extension. And I think the only way that that happens is if this entire offseason and going into the first like 25 games of the year, he is playing meaningful minutes. He's on the top power play. He, like, the only way I think that he is not willing to look for a move is if the Jets show that they're willing to give him ice time, and that doesn't waver either. I think the only way, there's no, hey, first five games of the year, he plays a ton and then that drops off. Like, I think the only way Ehlers signs an extension is if he sees that there's this large chunk of games where, oh my God, I'm actually playing in the third period. I'm not getting benched. I'm not playing two shifts. I'm getting top power play time. Or he's on the second power play and they've committed to playing both power plays even, both units evenly, and something like that. There has to be some sort of agreement. And I think even too, he might put something into his contract that he's got to.
I don't think that.
I mean,
I don't think you can put something into his contract.
You know what I mean. Yeah. Like, there has to be some sort of agreement there.
Yeah. And look, if Nikolaj Ehlers is on this team, and people will take your statement and be like, oh, well, what's the big difference between the first and the second line? Well, the second line was actually the third line, because Ehlers played less 5-on-5 ice time last season than Mason Appleton. And that's why he wants out. I can assure you, like, that is the reason. It's not because maybe it is because he's not getting top power play time, but 5-on-5, like you said, Elliot, he's getting benched down the stretch. He's playing less than third line wingers. What are we doing here? He thinks that he's like the C-Mac message here. Second best point total of his career, no power play time, dealing with a neck injury. Next team's getting a superstar in their prime. Matt saying superstar is generous. I do think superstar, maybe star. But hey, on a per rate basis, he's like the Jets' best or most productive forward.
5-on-5 points. He was, you know, among the league leaders as well. So it's, you know, and his 5-on-5 points per 60 is right up there too. So it's,
oh yeah,
give him the ice time, he's gonna thrive.
Yeah,
but he needs the ice time, and I think that's the only way that he stays. And if they can't promise him ice time,
maybe it's different under Arneal. Maybe it is, and maybe this message actually made me think of Utah immediately, because it's like, new team. There's one player that gets you out of your seat. They wouldn't mind. They have a ton of picks, ton of cap space. They wouldn't mind trading for and paying Nikolaj Ehlers and playing him on their top line, whatever, top six, whatever the case may be. But I just want to quickly touch on the value part of this, because there's been a lot of we acknowledge that it's going to be a weird market because Nikolaj Ehlers, like Alan says here, injuries, inconsistent play, stagnant, needs to play with speed. Playing with McDavid, that would be pretty fun to watch. But I think, like, the market, there's teams that are going to be high on him, and there's teams that are going to be calling, because even without looking at the analytics, he's a winger who put up 60 points in a mainly second line role with no power play goals the entire season. So he's a great 5-on-5 winger at 28 years old. That is it, without even looking at these per 60 rates and all the ways that he produces. I think that teams will be calling and there will be a market for him, but I don't think it'll be, this is funny, actually. I was going to bring this up. Maybe during the analytics summit, they figure out he's the best player. Someone made a joke. I brought it up on the LFP a few weeks ago, but someone made a joke that it was like, after the Jets have traded Ehlers and then they go to their analytics summit and it's someone like, no, what have we done? And it's like, yeah, I hope they have that before they trade him. And then they'll see, oh, hold on. But yeah, I think for PLD, there was a clear market because, you know, he's like this big power forward center two-way player that you can like get the moon for because he's getting paid $8.5 million a year, which is ridiculous. But for Ehlers, it's not that. He's not a center. He's not this power forward that wins in the playoffs, you know? Like, it's weird, but I still think they can get good value for him. Jay Miller earlier said, can't trade him for draft picks. I do think that they will trade him for draft picks if they don't like the market that's out there in terms of other things. They'll take a late first-round pick because they don't have one and move on from there if he's not going to sign. Or, like I said, I mean, it's June 9th, so it's hard to say this, but I could, again, totally see him staying on the Jets under this contract going into the season. I don't know what you think about that, Brian, what the odds of that are happening, or if you could see it happening.
It's tough to figure out because I feel like the big draft day trades are of years past.
Yeah.
I feel like that made it so much more interesting on draft nights where, you know, now it's like, oh, you know, Montreal has traded their, you know, 135th selection to Ottawa for the 134th. Yeah. And like now I think that you don't see any sort of blockbuster deal anymore. If there's a blockbuster deal, it happens 2 weeks before the trade deadline. That's just how it works. Yeah. And I think that if there's a deal to be made for draft picks for him, I'd like it to be to move up for the Jets into the top 15. If it's not that, I'm concerned about what you're getting in terms of value, because I think that with what he brings to whatever, that's the thing. If you're in the top 15, selecting, you're going to need someone who is as good as Nikolaj Ehlers to help, you know, push you over to that next level, because there's teams that, you know, just missed the playoffs, teams that are, you know, rebuilding and getting closer. And if you can get a, you know, 28, 29 year old to, you know, come in his prime, after putting up an immense amount of 5-on-5 points, probably going to get way more ice time there. Suddenly, it makes more sense. But I just don't know in terms of value and when it happens, if it does. And then I think that you're right. And I think he might reach training camp remaining on the same contract, because I know that the Jets are going to want to find something a little bit more, because they don't just want to hand him away because you're losing 60 points and a bunch of, you know, incredible 5-on-5 play. And you can't immediately, you know, replace that. There's no way you can replace that production, because let's be real, like, it's so hard finding that level of production for most teams. But in Winnipeg, no one's signing here as a free agent who's going to provide that much value.
Yeah. And honestly, like, a lot of the points you brought up, that's why I could see him staying into this next season, because the Jets are a win now team, or they're in a win now mode. Like, their core is what, Scheifele and Hellebuck, 30 on the wrong side of 30. So to trade a winger in your top six in his prime for a draft pick who's not going to make an impact for 4 years, that's tough. Like, if Ehlers gets traded for the 15th pick, this player is not playing until 2027, 2028. Yeah. Shifley's luckily 35, if 34?
Maybe
like that's the thing. So that's why the PLD deal was such like a swindle, because they, instead of fully rebuilding like everyone thought the Jets would, you know, Shifley, Hellebuck, PLD all out the door, it was PLD, Ofer, Velarde, and Iafallo, two pieces that can help them win right now, and a high second round pick the next year, Montreal, which turned out to be a high pick, but it's Montreal. You could kind of guess that anyways. But I think the ability to retool the deal, I don't think that that is an option with Nikolaj Ehlers. I think it's futures and I think it's picks. And I think Chevy looks at that and says, you know what, we're a win now team. I'm going to keep him into the season under this contract and think about it again at the deadline, because I don't know. I got a feeling that this drags out longer.
I saw it on Twitter and it made me irritated.
Oh God, here we go.
Where someone said, I can't remember who it was, that trading Nikolaj Ehlers does not make the Jets worse. And I have never disagreed with something more.
Like, the only way that that statement is true is if they get a legit top four right-handed defenseman in return.
Yep. I was just going to say that.
But like on a base level, if you're trading a 60-point guy who is arguably the best 5-on-5-point producer on your team, there's no way that you could possibly, you know, make that up like with what you have now. And like, let's be real. Like, I don't know how you could possibly, you know, mitigate the disaster that comes when suddenly you've lost a scoring touch on your second, third line. And you don't have that dynamic guy who can move around and, you know, jumpstart other lines like he's done in the past. So,
and to further that, I think it was Murat Ateş on Winnipeg Sports Talk, or maybe it wasn't, maybe I'm miscrediting this, but someone brought up the fact that, you know, the speed element. Say the Jets bring back Sean Monahan and trade Nikolaj Ehlers. This team is slow if they do that, right? Like, there's been interest.
The reason they looked so bad against Colorado is they were so much slower. They got skated into the ground, and you're trading your fastest player and probably going to bring back a guy who's slower than him.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, there's been reports that they're interested in bringing back Monahan. I don't know. Like, Evolving Hockey's contract projection for him is 3 years, $5.2 million. I think that's high for a player that's very high.
The
past couple of years. He did have a fully healthy, productive season this year and generated a lot in the playoffs. It didn't translate to points. But look, I think C-Mac brings it up. Like, I think that they'd just be too slow. If you trade Ehlers for a draft pick, re-sign Sean Monahan, and you've got Cole Perfetti and Sean Monahan in your top six and Gabriel Velarde, like, that's just
the current NHL. That's too slow. You can't.
So we'll see. And then there's a Lambert discussion going on in the chat here as well between Matt, C-Mac, and Jay. Lambert, is he an option next season? I don't know. If they trade away Ehlers and don't re-sign Sean Monahan, it might almost be out of necessity that he has
kind of has to
in the top six, right?
Kind of have to throw him to the wolves.
Yep. Hope you're ready. Here you go. But yeah, we'll see. Do we want to talk about the draft? We want to talk about the draft. This is a good kind of segue because, you know, we're talking about Ehlers potentially being traded for draft picks. They might have a first round pick or not, but they definitely have the 37th pick. But first, let's hear a word from DraftKings maybe, and then we'll come back and talk about the draft. There's been some discussions recently. I know Brian's put out some posts at the Hockey Writers. So go check them out if you haven't, on the value that the Jets could get at the 37th pick. Some of the players that could be there, lots of good stuff. So go check that out. But when we come back, we're going to talk about it here on LFP Live. Thanks for joining us. First, you're going to hear a word from DraftKings. We'll be right back.
The chase for the Stanley Cup continues, and the action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NHL, is just as hot as it is on the ice. With same-game parlays, live betting, odds boosts, and so much more, don't miss out as the Stanley Cup playoffs wind down. And if you're new to DraftKings, you gotta check this out. New customers can bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets instantly. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use code THPN. That's code THPN for new customers to get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Only on DraftKings, the crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777. 7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 plus, age varies by jurisdiction, void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/ice for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources. Copyright NHL 2024, all rights reserved.
Am I on mute the whole time? Was I on mute?
I didn't know if it was me or you.
Okay. I was on mute the whole time. All right, we're back. Thank you everyone for tuning in to the 16th edition.
Thanks, Matt.
I thought your internet had going, but it hadn't caught up.
I was like talking, you guys weren't reacting, so I looked down and I was like, I saw red. I was like, oh boy, I'm on mute. Anyways, I'm back. The reason I was on mute is because it was starting to rain here a little bit, and the rain on the gazebo here was kind of loud. But anyways, we're good. Yeah. Put a quarter in the jar. We're back. We're back. We're okay. Thank you, everyone, for tuning into LFB Live. We're here every single Sunday morning, 9 a.m. We really appreciate it. Come on by. Say a few words in the chat. We really do appreciate it. Now let's talk about the draft coming up. The Jets have the 37th pick. That is courtesy of the Montreal Canadiens in the PLD trade we just talked about. There's going to be value there. This draft has been described as kind of a weak class. But as Brian wrote in the Hockey Writers, NHL history has shown that, you know, the Jets could get good value with that 37th pick, and they could even have a higher pick if they trade Ehlers, to get into the first round there. Brian, maybe just quickly touch on what you kind of found in your research on both the value the Jets will get at 37 and some of the players that you were looking into that they could target at that spot.
Yeah, I mean, like recently, I know in Arizona, the 37th pick was what got them Josh Doan, who made his NHL debut. Obviously, we all know that he is Shane Doan's son. I know at the time, myself included, I was convinced that I'm like, oh, that's a nepotism pick, 100%. But he's, you know, developed over the last couple of years, and he, yeah, you know, came in, scored two goals in his opener, and, you know, He looked good in his, I think he played 11 games this season. It was, you know, he looked good in that small sample size. But like in terms of historical picks, guys like Boone Jenner, you know, Justin Falk, they came out of the 37th pick. And then I was looking a little bit deeper into guys that might be available at that range. I that's the thing. It's hard to, you know, really project anything past the first round, because some guys, you know, you get to a point where they're close enough that they might rise, they might fall. It's hard to tell. And, you know, being five picks into the second round, there's a few guys that are sort of sitting at the, you know, that lower level of the first round, higher level of the second round, where I know Tanner Howe came up, who you know, plays in the WHL for Regina. He played with Connor Bedard last year, so a lot of people were sort of wondering, what does he do without Connor Bedard? And he went out there and he still looked good. He's a very tenacious player. He's very strong in the puck. He's smart on his forechecks. He's got really good finishing ability and tight. He's going to be one of those guys that really gets under the skin of other opponents and everything. So I know that really sort of fits into what a lot of the NHL is doing, where it's the skill mixed with the agitation. So you get that. I looked at some defensemen because I know that there's the conversation, which we'll get to in a little bit, whether it's you draft for need or you draft best player available. And I tried to do a little bit of a combination between the two, because I was also looking at guys like EJ Emery, who is a big defenseman. He's 6'3 right now. You know, he's born in British Columbia. He's got dual citizenship, but he chooses to represent the U.S. So he's currently playing in the U.S. development program. Big defenseman, very strong defensively. He's got to work on his offense a little bit, but he is one of those guys that is incredible at defending the rush. And obviously in the junior ranks, the speed of the game is so high that if you're good at defending the rush in that level, that's probably something that's going to translate fairly well, because it's your reads, right? It's your hockey IQ.
Oh yeah.
So you get guys like him. I looked at Dominik Badinka, who, he, you know, has been playing over in Sweden, but he is, he's a Czech player. He's another big 6'3 defenseman. He's got really good puck handling. He's very good at moving the puck up the ice. He's strong defensively on the rush. He's got to work on some of his stick handling and his skill ability, but, what you're looking at is essentially a guy who is ready to move the puck at the NHL level, but it's the little fine tuning of the skills that it's going to take to sort of adjust him to the North American ice. But I looked at both forward and defenseman just to try and give a little bit of a mix. And then there was also too, like, a lot of people didn't like my take on it, but I was looking at sort of a high risk, high reward guy.
Mm-hmm.
He was born in Denmark, but he plays in Liga. His name is Aaron Kiviharju. He is a fantastic puck moving, defenseman, and he has some question marks because he missed most of the season this year with injury. But his puck moving ability is what a lot of teams are looking for now. So it wouldn't shock me, even with missing the time, if he goes higher than the 37th pick. But with so many teams prioritizing skill and puck moving, I think that, you know, he might be a guy that if he's available, maybe that's a risk reward situation. But there was two things that showed up, and that's, you know, hockey IQ and the ability to, you know, really defend the rush and move the puck. So
They're like you said, like you started that part there, like they're going to get value with the 37th pick. We kind of knew high second round picks, you can always get good players there. And then the players you brought up, it sounds like they will, that statement will reign true and they will get value there. Elliot, I want to ask you the question of need versus like BPA. We have it on the right side there, best player available versus need. Obviously the need for the Jets is defense. I mean, their defensive prospect pool is Elias Solomonson and then a bunch of guys. Because they've drafted four forwards the last 4 years in the first round, right? So I think the defenseman is the pick, no matter what their first pick is, whether it's a late first from Ehlers, or it's an early second that they just hold on to this pick. I think it's a defenseman. But where do you lie on that? Like, if a forward's really falling, do you lean towards that, or are you like stick with the need all the way through? Where do you sit on that?
So I have always been a proponent of going BPA. So the way that I view it is, unless your need is like a couple picks away from BPA, I never reach for need, because in my mind, the way that I see it is, even if you have, like, let's say down the road, we get to the draft, let's just say everything stays the same, Jets keep the 37th pick. If BPA is a forward, take BPA, because at the end of the day, if you have an abundance of forwards, you then have multiple options. You can either A, trade that player in another trade for whatever your current need is actually on your roster, or B, you then trade that prospect for another prospect that is still your need that you feel like is a better option. I would rather have BPA and have an abundance of something that you can then use to fill out another spot rather than reaching for a need. And then that player either, obviously there's still prospects there. You never know. They could still not fulfill what you're looking for, but I think it's better to go with BPA and have an abundance of something rather than reaching down 15, 20 picks for your need or for a player that fits your need, rather than maybe even just taking BPA and then 5 minutes later trading that BPA for a player that actually fits what you're looking for, that yes, may not be a current draft prospect and could be a year or two to like a year or two out still, but could have had some sort of, not film, but I think you guys get what I mean. I'm always BPA, because at 99% of the time when you go with need, you're always reaching, and it's unless you get super lucky, you're normally your reach for need is normally a bad pick because you're not in that right frame of mind. If you go BPA, I would say 80% of the time, which in a draft is pretty safe. I think 80% of the time for BPA is always at least you get something out of it.
Yeah. Yeah, fair enough. I Matt brought up, is Ville considered a prospect still? I think so. I think so. I mean, what is he, 22, 23? Hasn't played much.
He's 23.
In the NHL. I think he's still a prospect.
He's had 5 years in the org. I don't know.
Yeah.
I think you're
it's a long time, but
I also don't look at age anymore. I kind of look at how many years they've been in the organization, and he's been in the org for almost 5 seasons. Like, I remember going and watching him in preseason the year he got drafted. And that was like, that was almost when we were like about, I guess that would have been just before we were at CMU. Like, that was almost a long time
pre-COVID,
ago.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was pre-COVID. Like, that's quite a while ago.
Yeah. But anyways, I still think he's on the borderline there. This is where I'm at. I agree with you 100%, Elliot. I'm always a BPA guy. Like, if there's four great forwards at the top of the draft board and then a defenseman, even though you really need a defenseman, I'd take one of the forwards, like, because, you know, swing for the fences. You could get a big time forward at that spot. This draft is the first time in a long time where I've actually kind of swung to the other side of things, just because of how kind of dry the Jets' defensive prospect pool is, and how, like, I don't know if they went BPA last year with Barlow, but they went best, like, one of the best forwards available for sure. And that is what they've done the last 4 years, is with McGroarty, with Lambert, who slid and was a high upside pick, and Lucius at that spot is one of the best forwards on the board. That's a BPA pick. They've pushed the defensive side of things down the road so far now that I think maybe at this point you have to take one. Like, I don't know if you can walk out of this draft with another forward. In the entire draft, yes. I'm saying as your first pick, whether that be the first round, the second round, I think they have to go defenseman here. I lean more towards need. And I get all your points. It's like, you want to swing for the fences. You want an abundance of really great forwards. I'm all in on that. But I feel like they have that for the future. They were ranked 13th on McKean's Hockey's prospect pool rankings, and the first six guys were forwards. And then it was Salomonson or something, or it was Salomonson was five, and then Chibrikov was six. And it was like five of the first six were forwards. And it's like, well, and there were no other defensemen on the list, except for, I think Hanala was actually on there, funny enough. But I don't know. I think
that's where you can make a trade. If you trade for another forward, I don't know. Yeah. I've always been someone that if you have the ability, have a two, chance, if you have an abundance of one thing, why not move one or two of those that you're not too sure about to fill out a need, rather than let's reach for a need. You could trade for somebody else in somebody else's organization and maybe even get a little bit more back from that. Right. So that's all I'm saying. Like, I get what you're saying too. It's kind of, they're walking a weird line because they've picked forwards for a while, but and I get that they need a D. And they're right-handed D in their entire organization, NHL or in the prospect pool, is quite, like, it's like they're allergic to them. But yeah, I don't know. I think you take BPA and you move and get the need that you need, whether that be trading Lucius for another defensive prospect. Because that's another player that I don't think we've realized that he seems to still have value around the league. Like, people seem to still value him as a prospect.
That's a tough sell.
It's minimal.
That's a tough sell.
It seems to be more than others.
Three of the last 4 years with major.
There's not even a guarantee that he plays at a high level again.
Oh, for sure. I agree with that. I'm just saying it seems to be that he has more value than we think he has elsewhere. But that would be somebody that I would. But again, that's where my thought process goes. Okay, how can I take Lucius and turn him into potentially a right-handed D prospect from another organization and flip that? And then if that doesn't work, at least you have depth there, rather than, okay, we've got an abundance of forwards and this forward didn't work out and we didn't move him for something else. But that's how my brain works. I know, obviously, I'm not an NHL general manager, and so it's kind of
it's tough to sell. We are not managing the Winnipeg Jets right now, so it's tough to act on that. But I agree. That's Brian, where do you outlined, like, they might get value, some players they could target, but where do you sit on kind of that spectrum of need versus best player available? Where are you at there?
Well, to be honest with you, I still sit best player available, but I think at that range, from what I can tell in the rankings, best player available is probably going to be a defenseman. There's a lot of defenders that are sort of hanging around that area.
Yeah,
that works.
Boom. Then that completely absolves my argument.
We shouldn't even be having this discussion right now. No, I'm kidding.
Well, because there were so many when I was doing research, because it took like 2 or 3 days to like really go through and figure out who is going to be available in that range. And there are a lot of forwards, but I feel like the forwards are more volatile in the rankings, where either they're going to be ranked a lot lower because, you know, some scouts really, you know, pick on certain things that they either do or don't have, or they're going to be into the first round because they're flashy, right? So
yeah,
in terms of that range, you're getting a lot of just like rock solid, you know, dudes that just know how to play their position really well. And that, you know, first few picks of that second round, you're getting a lot of, you know, not guarantees, but you know what you're getting, I think. And, you know, that's why I brought up guys like EJ Emery, who is probably a late first rounder. But if he falls, I think that's kind of like a perfect pick for them in terms of what they're looking for. They want something a little bit more stable. And I know some people, you know, they want more of the flashiness, but I think Emery has the ability. Also, he is an athletic freak. He led the combine in both vertical jump, squat jump, and horizontal jump. He is athletically so gifted. He has a body fat index of 3.64. Like, he is so incredibly fit that he is going to be one of those guys that I think you're going to hear about down the line being like, oh yeah, here's what, you know, EJ Emery, you know, he's got his own personal chef and whatever. And
yeah.
But he is an athletically gifted kid that I think that if you can combine that with the skills that he has in terms of his defensive ability, it feels like that's kind of a really, you know, good pick in that range. And like, I know people joke about it, but let's be real. They kind of like the U.S. development program picks.
Yeah.
And there's the Michigan, been a lot of
CMAC brought
he, up. See, like, he's, I think he's committed to UND. So right down the road there.
Oh, no.
Wouldn't shock me. I do think that, you know, really combining the pun intended, the combine results with what you've seen from him on the ice, you know, you're getting a fantastic athlete who is constantly looking to better his ability, you know, physically and on the ice. And I think that could be a thing of, you know, this is what they take at best player available because that's what they think is the best player available.
Yeah. Yeah. And just quickly, speaking of the combine, did you guys see, shout out Mark, the credentials manager at the Hockey Writers. He's on location covering the event. He tweeted out that multiple players have confirmed, but they won't say what team it is, but they're asking what player's Snapchat score and Uber rating is.
I think the Uber one was Utah.
Did they confirmed that it was Utah?
Why does that? Why? I get the Snapchat score, but like,
I don't get the Snapchat score.
I get the Uber one.
Yeah, the Uber rating makes more sense because it's like you're with a stranger. How does this stranger see like your manners in a car? Like that
I
makes
guess,
sense.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, did you treat I don't know, people what with if respect? I just have a Snapchat how do you deal with other people? Like
Snapchat all my friends. Like I don't know. That's just so.
But
weird.
I think that's what they're.
Well, if it's higher, does it mean that you don't dedicate yourself enough to hockey?
Is that
that's probably what the old heads are looking at? I'm sorry, I say old heads because that is. The older, I'm walking a fine line here, but the older generation.
Just the Uber one was Utah.
The Snapchat one I get because lots of older people associate people on their phones with Snapchat and associate those, and older people associate people who are on Snapchat a lot as people who aren't dedicated to what they're doing. So I can get some older people who don't understand are asking that. And that's their frame of who this person is. But that's how I'm just saying that is how some older people that I have even encountered as where I've worked and people I've talked to see Snapchat as. And I would not be surprised if there is management groups around the NHL of people who are around the 55 to 65 year old range that don't understand technology that much that see Snapchat as this terrible, bad thing that like is ruining players' careers and lives. I'm just saying. Careers.
But like, it's way more sensible to ask about screen time then. Like, if you're just
I agree with that.
Like, what if I have a crippling Twitter addiction, and I don't go on Snapchat.
I mean,
so my Snapchat score is low.
But I do.
So my Snapchat score is super low.
That's why you weren't drafted,
good?
Connor.
Is that good? I have 12 hours a day on Twitter. I just feel like you're missing the plot. Like, you can ask about the Uber rating. I get that because, like I said, you're with a stranger in a car. They rate you on like your manners and how nice you were to them and all those things. And that's like valuable. Like Matt brought it up. They want quality people. You want to be a quality person to your Uber drivers. But the Snapchat score just makes no sense.
Well,
we've got Mike Babcock in chat here with no, <I'm kidding. laughs> Yeah.
But you see all these weird questions all the time, right? Like the NFL seems to be like the place where all these questions happen. Like
the amount of times
that I've heard the whole, they've asked about like question in terms of questions like the railroad question, if you guys know what I'm talking about. I don't want to get into it, but like between like that one's in the NFL all the time. Like I swear all 30 teams ask that question, right? Like they ask stupid questions. And I get that I've watched so many things that there's stuff behind these questions, but some of them are just so wild. Like, even the one about Keon Coleman from, you guys have seen that video where they ask him if he plays golf and it seemed like a very important question. And he made the joke about Tiger Woods. Like, there's questions like that are just so stupid that I just don't get it. Like they're not important questions.
Maybe it's to like the asking a stupid question thing might be to like
how he answers
by taking it. Like, like if I'm sitting there and he goes, "What's your Snapchat score?" I'd be like, "What are you talking about?" And he'd be like, "Oh, this guy doesn't care. Like he wouldn't answer our question." Like, I don't know.
Well, like let's be real. Like you've seen it in the past that teams will base their draft decisions on how players answer really dumb questions in a very pressure-filled interview. And then they go on and be like really, good somewhere else where it's like, we asked him why he thinks he should be drafted higher and he answered. And so therefore we thought he was cocky and we didn't want to draft him.
But his Uber rating was a 4.5. So that bumped him back up the board.
Bring him back up first overall.
Score was too high. So that bumped it right back down.
What if Macklin Celebrini's Uber score is awful?
What if? Could be. Could Macklin Celebrini slide to 7? A little Bo Callahan action with the Uber rating.
Wow.
Anyway, did nobody go to his birthday party or what?
yeah, exactly. Anyways, it's time. We always wrap the episodes with this. We're nearing 10 o'clock already, but I don't know. I'm out here.
We'll go a little over.
We're going a little over. I'm out here, enjoying the day. But anyways, drop your questions in the chat. And as I wrote there, hit the subscribe button while you are down there dropping your questions. Again, I saw Matt bring it up earlier, actually. I got to go back to it because, here it is. I hope Lambert is eating all the briskets. There's another brisket mention. I think we're batting 1,000 still. Or we did miss one, actually. There was one episode where it didn't get brought up until the very end. We were like, oh, no, how did it not get brought up? But anyways, this is how the brisket, we bring it up every single time because
we haven't seen Sammy Smokes in a hot minute.
Yeah. I don't know. I might have to reach out, see what's going on. But I think these questions can be about anything. Could be about hockey. Could be about our Uber ratings. Could be,
don't have one.
You're not getting drafted, Elliot. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I guess not.
Would make sense. Drop your questions below. Uber driver summit. Yeah, exactly. that's the analytics summit. That's the number they're gonna look at. Everyone, bring your Uber rating.
Only one number matters. Ehlers, five chances. No.
Nikolai Ehlers,
5 Uber rating.
Gone. Yeah. Oh my god.
Which wouldn't there not be very many because most of those guys drive themselves or have a driver that they like. Yeah.
Well, I guess they would Uber on the road if they're like going out to a restaurant.
Yeah. True.
On an off day or something,
True.
I think maybe they'd Uber then. But
we're
again,
off the rails.
Hey, that's okay. That's part of the LFP experience.
We're having an Uber summit. That's what we're doing. An Uber summer summit. This is what we do on LFP Live. We get off track. Okay. Welcome. If it's your first time, we really appreciate it.
Imagine joining the first time you've joined LFP Live and we're rambling about
Ubers?
NHL players Uber ratings.
that's, hey, this is what the NHL wanted. Or this is what Utah wanted. Sorry.
Yeah.
Or you know what? To expand it more, this is what the NHL wanted because they moved Arizona to Utah and Utah asked the question. So
yeah. So it's actually Gary Bettman asking.
It's Bettman. That's why Florida won game one, man. It's Bettman.
Okay. Gary Bettman's Uber rating.
Yeah. What would Gary's Uber rating be?
I actually feel like he's a pretty good guy. Like, I think he gets a bad rap, but
I think he would have a good Uber rating. That's a hot take.
Yeah.
Anyways, C-Max, let's get to the questions. We could talk about Ubers, I guess for a while. I guess that's what we can prove. But anyways, what is the average length of a Gold Eyes game? Went on Tuesday and that was a 1-0 win, which would be fast, but goddamn, that game was fast. They are faster now with the pitch clock. I would say they average out at around 2.5 hours. Sometimes when it's a 1-0 game, it'll like creep down towards the 2-hour mark.
It was sub two in that
sub two.
Unfortunate.
That's
crazy. Yeah. So the game where
that's crazy.
It was a 1-0 loss to Kane County. Where Landon Barasa had a 9-inning effort. He had a no hitter going into the 7th. Both pitchers I think went the distance. That game was 158.
That is way too quick. Honestly, that's.
Listen, I got to drive home and the sun was out still. It was a miracle.
Yeah. Like the pitch clock is great and it has interested me in baseball, not only the Gold Eyes and the major leagues more than before because it's more fast paced. But man, you go to a game and it's under 2 hours. Like that's just ridiculous.
A 2.5 hour mark is kind of a sweet spot.
Yeah. And then there are games where, you know, the final score is like 7-5 and it ends up being like almost 3 hours. So I'd say anywhere from like 2 hours and 15 minutes to 2 hours and 45 minutes, I'd say is the average. To answer the question, C-Mac. Matt saying Gold Eyes and Sea Bears playing today.
Yes,
big games. Who do the Sea Bears play?
They play the Surge today. They're in Calgary. They went all the way from Niagara to Calgary in like 3 days.
Tough distance traveled. They showed that graphic before the finals. It was like distance traveled Edmonton and Florida, and then they added it all up and it was like a 2500 kilometer difference. I'm like, okay, that's 17,000 to 14,500 or 15,500. It's like, all right,
the only thing I want to say about the Sea Bears today is if you are going to watch, I'm very curious to see how Teddy Allen plays today. He got ejected in the game against Niagara. So I don't know what's going to happen. Should be interesting today.
Should be interesting. Yeah. And then the Gold Eyes, they are in, where are they?
Milwaukee. They're playing the Milkmen. Yeah,
they're closing out their three-game series against the Milkmen.
One of the best names in the league.
Still miss the Wichita Wingnuts.
Me too.
I especially miss when we beat them
in
the championship game. We saw another great pitching performance last night for the Gold Eyes. Zach Reininger went 8 2/3, only needed Justin Courtney for one out in the game. They ended up winning that one 7-4. The bats are heating up. They lost the first game, but they are overall, they've been very, you know, up there considering like King County was the best in the East when they played them. They won the series against them. Milwaukee's right up near the top there. They've got a lot of really good players too. So the Gold Eyes are really, they're pushing hard here. And they're finishing up their series there, and then they play Kane County again. They wrap up their season series against them later this week.
Right. Which is, before even like the 30 game mark or like around the 30 game mark, we're wrapping up season series. Pretty crazy. But C-Mac, do you pick the player 37 to complete the PLD trade or use it to trade up? Now, using it to trade up is interesting. And then he asks again, do the Jets use 37 to pick up more picks? So that would theoretically be trading down. I can't see them trading this pick specifically because it was from the PLD trade. It's their earliest pick as we know right now. And yes, they don't have a third and they're short on picks next year as well. Sure, there's a bug in here. I just can't see them trading this pick. I think it's too good of a value for a second rounder and they're just going to stick with it and pick it. Or maybe they trade Goodness gracious.
What
like,
is that?
I don't know. But
that was definitely a bird for sure.
Yeah. What kind of bird though? Let's get into the bird discussion. No.
Bird experts in the chat.
Yes. Drop what bird.
I'm sure there is.
There's the sound. There's the sound.
I'm sure there is.
But anyways, I can't see them trading that pick. It's too good of value. Where's your favorite spot you've traveled to? This is a great question. Elliot, I'll start with you.
I'm going to have to go to, I was just there like 3 weeks ago. I'm going to have to go with Orlando. It's Vegas is a very close second, but
yeah,
I haven't been anywhere like cool. Like not to say those places aren't cool, but I haven't been like to Europe or anything, which is a goal, but
yeah,
I will have to go with Florida. Disney World was pretty hard to beat.
It's yeah, pretty sick. Brian, where's your favorite spot you've traveled to?
I mean, one of the best that, you know, I've had is, you know, I went out to Vancouver in 2019 for the World Juniors. That was unfortunately the year that I did not even get to see a single Canada game because they lost to Finland in the quarters, but I digress. You know, I got to hang out around there for a few days right around the new year. So it was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed, you know, hanging out there and, you know, just wandering, you know, and trying out a bunch of different places. And, you know, I walked the entirety of the seawall around Stanley Park. Nice, and, yeah. I'd love to go back when I'm not just focused on hockey, and just kind of enjoy the city a bit more. But yeah, you know, I'd say that's probably my number one. And I also quite a few years back, I went down to DC and spent a few days there and checked out a bunch of things. And you know, so that was a lot of fun, but no, I think Vancouver's up there for me.
Yeah. For me, you guys both brought it up. Orlando. I've been there many, many times, been fortunate enough to go with my family a ton. Last year went, saw LeBron James play the Magic, which is my first time seeing LeBron live, which was like a bucket list thing for me. So that was
didn't
like
he have a good game that night too?
He did. The Lakers won by like 20 and LeBron had like 27-8 and eight or something. Yeah, he
had the LeBron stat line.
He had one sick like alley-oop jam, and it was like the craziest thing. It was so awesome, but it was everything I could have asked for. And then Vancouver, I went there a few summers ago with my girlfriend and her family. Amazing. Love it. I was there in the summer. Vancouver in the summer is gorgeous. I've never been in the winter, but I've heard it just
rains. It's pretty. It's in the winter. I went with CMU basketball a couple years back. It was nice. It was nice to wear shorts, but lots of hills. And, I don't know if it was kind of hard playing a game and then we were going to try to get food and I had to walk up like 15 hills after that. That was just not fun.
Yeah. Doug brings up Banff. I did go on a ski trip once with all my friends. That was an absolute blast too. I'd never been skiing and we went and we had fun. And then, that's about it. I mean, I went to San Francisco once as well. That was super fun to see a 49ers game. Yeah. That's very fortunate enough to go on a lot of vacations. Let's get back to the Jets talk here. Is there a contract buyout by the Jets this offseason? Schmidt, Pionk, should there be? Schmidt, I think if they're unable to maybe like attach a late round pick and move him to a team with a ton of cap space, he'll get bought out.
Gotta be.
Pionk, I think it's less likely that they entirely buy him out. I could still see a trade happening. I could still see a buyout happening, but I just think it's all less likely than Schmidt is for both of those things. Do you guys agree?
Yeah. Schmidt's the more likely. That's all I'll say.
Yeah, I was thinking that's the same. That's all I got. Thing. Well, it's funny too. I brought this up too. He's been, you know, in and out of here, and he watches a lot. But my buddy Connor from New York, he is a huge Rangers fan, and Rangers fans, a lot of them have been very soured on Jacob Trouba after his playoff performance. And I asked him, "Would you prefer current Jacob Trouba or Neil Pionk and Ville Heinola?" And he refused to answer the question because he goes, "It changes every year."
He pled the fifth. Yeah, that's
does change call. Every year.
It does change every single year. Well, that trade initially was like an absolute fleece for the Jets, an absolute fleece for the Rangers because Trouba played great. They extended him long time, $8 million, top pair guy.
Captain.
And it was captain. It was like, oh boy, now Trouba like just kind of runs around, like
send to the boards,
and like, well, he was playing through a broken ankle or had a broken ankle this season or something. I don't know.
Like a chunk of his ankle was gone.
But he still found the strength to leap into people's heads. So I don't know, like, where
it's a good thing that ankle doesn't impact his elbow coming up high.
Exactly. Yeah, a lot of people with some really cool places that they've been here in the chat. I like we said off the top, I'm in Falcon Lake, Halifax next week. Enjoy that vacation. I am in Falcon Lake. We camp here all the time. A more low-key vacation, but camping still counts.
Yeah,
for the weekend. So
we got the family cabin up here in the White Shell. So
the bus
coming out here since there it is.
Bus.
The bus.
I've been coming out here since I was before I can even remember. So
yeah. All right. I think that's gonna do it for today's episode. We went a little long, but hey, like I said, sitting out here in nature, having a great time. Thank you everyone for tuning into LFP Live. We're here every Sunday. Hit the subscribe, hit the notification bell so you get notified every Sunday. Maybe you just wake up, you're pouring your first coffee, notification pops up. Oh, right. LFP is live every single Sunday at 9 a.m. I've been to Garbage Hill. Humble brag. Love it. Love it.
Don't even get me started about Garbage Hill.
Mullins talk. Okay. Oh. Maybe next week. We'll save it for next week.
Or Matt, you can always send something to me on DM or whatever. DM. I'm glad to talk Seabrook. I'm funny enough, just about to make my post that they play today. So if you want to reply to that, I can definitely answer that online.
Hit Elliot up if you have any Seabears questions. He's got the answer. We will head out LFP Live. Thank you, everyone. Episode 16. We'll be back next Sunday, episode 17. Hit the like, hit the subscribe, and have a great couple days, everyone. Enjoy the Stanley Cup Finals. Enjoy the weather. It's starting to get nicer out. And
I got one more thing to say.
Okay, uh-oh. Go ahead.
So, two things actually. Firstly, last week we axed a couple of episodes just because there really wasn't much to talk about and a bunch of stuff going on. And so we're going to keep you updated on socials as to how many episodes we're going to be publishing, or for the next little bit, it's just going to be the live show. We'll let you know. And then I just want to end off on this. Just wanted to pass on our thoughts to Ted Wyman from The Sun.
Yes.
He recently put out there on Twitter that he's been undergoing some radiation and chemo, spent 16 days in hospital. So we just want to, send some positive thoughts over to him. We'd like to really sort of, all the local media want to, support each other. So, absolutely. I know Ted's been around and, this scene for so long, and I've worked with him a little bit directly with The Sun with some of my Gold Eye stuff. So I want to, to put that out there before we head out today. So we're thinking of you, Ted. Best of luck, positivity your way.
Yeah, absolutely. Great guy. Absolutely great guy.
Yeah. I've met him a few times. Awesome guy. All of our thoughts with him. Thank you for bringing that up, Brian. I did want to bring that up. So thank you. Good luck to Ted with the battle. He put it out on Twitter. There's tons of support. Everyone's behind him. And you love to see that in the chat. Yeah, sending good thoughts to Ted. Positive vibes here on a Sunday morning. Let's get out of here. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. I'm not going to do a long goodbye because we did it a few times. Good luck. Have a great week, everyone. Good luck to Teddy Wyman in his battle. Sending good thoughts, good vibes. And we will see you all next Sunday, LFP Live. Have a great couple of days, everyone.
See you.
Peace.